Blog Talk Radio.
Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Yes, well, it's a cloudy and warm day today here in New York City. I'm out here in Queens County. And, well, kind of have, I guess it's a bit interesting, unusual. Okay. First, now, America's Got Talent. You ever wonder about what it's like trying to get in on the show? Well, this will be, we have Mighty Atom Jr., that's A-T-O-M. He's a 93-year-old man and who can pull a car using his teeth. And then we also have Curly Hall, who worked at the 1964 World's Fair at the African Pavilion, and today he's a member of the Federation of Black Cowboys. So what did he do at the fair, and how did he become a cowboy? Well, we'll get to that. As a matter of fact, I think I have Mighty Atom on now. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, is this Mighty Atom?
This is Mike Greenstein.
Okay.
better known as the Mighty Atom Jr.
Jr.
Yes.
Okay,
My father was the Mighty Atom.
And what, did he do the same thing?
Nowhere near in my ability that what he did. He was known as the world's strongest man, and his life story is in the public library. I could never do anything that he did. He did so many more things than I could ever dream of doing.
But you decide to follow his footsteps anyway, huh?
That's what it's all about. I enjoy doing what I'm doing. And not saying at my age doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I love doing it, and I love keeping the way I am, knowing that I can do the things that I do.
Well, before I ask you about how you eat, drink, and whatever kind of thing, let's first go to what made you even decide to like follow your father's footsteps?
Well, I give you an idea of how it started.
Yeah.
6 weeks after Pearl Harbor, I went into the service. My training was aircraft. I was going to aircraft school to learn to be a mechanic. When I got out, I went to work for a while at Wright-Patterson Field in Ohio. Then I came home. I didn't like being away from home that way, so I came back. Then the war broke out, and they needed mechanics in a hurry. So they made me a teacher. I was teaching aircraft when the war broke out.
Yeah.
I was in I was in Goldsboro, North Carolina, at a camp, and my dad and my mother and my sister and brother came to visit me at the camp. My dad was known throughout the world as the strongest man in the world, and his reputation everyone knew. They talked him into doing a show for the servicemen, which, of course, he didn't mind. He did it. He loved doing it, too. So he did a show for them at the camp. After he left, they started to ask me, well, can you do any of that? I told them that I did a lot of training with my dad, but I never really did any feats of strength for any audiences in any way. He says, well, can you possibly do it? So I said, well, let me get a little act together and see how I can do. So I got my dad to get me some equipment, some little things, and he brought it to me the following weekend. And I did a performance for the servicemen. And from that time on, I continued doing it. And throughout the war, no matter what camp I went to, be it Amarillo Air Base, Keesler Field, Mississippi, Biloxi, I was in Denver, Colorado. I was all over many camps. I would do shows for the servicemen, other than whenever I had the time or my time off, and do shows in the towns, wherever I happened to be. I would do shows in town at the local theaters to raise money for the war bonds. And that's how I kept going. Whenever I had spare time, time off, or whatever it was, I would either do shows in the town, pull cars in the towns, be on the stage and bend iron bars and break chains and all of these things. And in camp, I'd do shows for the servicemen, for the USO. And that's how I continued doing it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed entertaining people. And at the same time, I was doing my exercise in this crazy way, you might say. And that's how it went on to this day. After I got out of the service, I went to work for Trans World Airlines. And in between, I was doing shows when I was there. And that was me.
So let me ask you first, because I want to get into this about in regards to America's Got Talent. Tell me, how did you decide to audition for this, and you know what was the procedure for doing it?
I have watched the show on television at various times. I never dreamed of auditioning for it. The producer of the America Got Talent heard about me along the way. I appeared in the local newspaper in Rockaway, where I live. They had some photographs of me doing stunts. And through that, the New York Times got word of it, and they came down with photographers and a few people and had me pull a vehicle. And one way or another, I started to get publicized in doing these things. And somewhere along the line, America Got Talent got wind of it, and they called me. I never auditioned. They called me and asked if I would like to be on the show. And, of course, I accepted, and that's how it all began.
So let me ask you, usually on the first episode, because this is the thing I had been wondering about, on the first episode, people go into a room and they audition in front of the judges, and I thought, what are you going to do? Are you going to bring in a car and tow it with your teeth. I was trying to figure out.
Well,
so on,
when, when they brought me, when I got the call about the audition, I said, fine, they told me what date. I came down. There was a room with, I would say, over 100 people in there in different costumes and dance costumes and different acts, whatever they were doing. And I was in the room the same way all of them were. We all sat around, and I had some of the interviewers talk to me, ask me what I do, and one came over to me and asked certain questions, and this went on for a few hours, questioning me as to what I do. And that's about what happened. But I never actually asked to be auditioned. I was asked if I would like to come and do it. I said I would love to. I love the exposure. I like the praise that I get, especially at my age, being able to do what I do. And that's how it all began.
So now what I'm curious about, and you don't have to, I'm not going to ask you to tell me what you did or whatever, but on America's Got Talent, like each, well, not week, each time that somebody returns, they have to try to top, I guess, what they did the week before. Did you sit down and figure out, like, in case you make it through at certain points, you know, things that you were going to do?
I thought about all of that. I've done various feats of strength throughout my life, not just pulling with my teeth. And I've thought about different variations of things that I can do. And I'm taking it from that point. I decided to pull a vehicle with my teeth and see how they like it. If I go further, time will tell. I can bend steel bars. I can break chains. I still feel that I can still do this at my age, although the last time I broke chains and bent bars was over 20 years ago. But I feel mind control has a lot to do with it. I feel if I'm strong enough mentally, I will be strong physically. And that's the way I apply my strength.
What would you say is the, if you want to call it, the strongest thing you've ever done? The thing that required the most strength?
The strongest thing I've ever done, well, it's various things. Pulling the vehicles is not an easy bit.
I have to. At 93 years old, are they your own teeth?
They're my own teeth.
Okay.
I still have my own teeth. My dad bit spikes in half with his teeth.
Wow.
In fact, at one point, I have a letter signed by approximately 10 of the gentlemen that were at the York Barbell Company, Strength and Health magazine. They were, in fact, there's John Grimmick, who's passed away a few years ago, but he was a Mr. Universe 7 times, and he was finally barred from all competition because he was too perfect. He, together with a lot of these strongmen from the York Barbell Company, got together and with my dad and said, what if we supply the nail? My dad says, fine. This fellow, John Grimmick, put the nail in my dad's mouth himself. And my dad put his hands behind his back, and he chewed away until he bit the nail in half with his teeth.
Wow.
And that was my dad. Now, I could never do that. I do feats of strength. I could bend, break, and so on. I put a chain across my chest with chest expansion, although I haven't done it for a while. But with chest expansion, I broke the chain. My dad held a world record where he'd break three heavier chains than I did, three at one time across his chest, which is a world record. Anybody can find out about my dad, but all they have to do is go to the library and get his life story, which is there.
Yeah, brother, is this going to be the first time that you're on TV?
Yes, I would
Okay, have you ever been, like, on the news or something like that?
The news, I've been in papers, I've been...
But, so in other words, this is the first
places,
time you're appearing on
but
TV.
But I've never been on TV.
Okay. And what was the experience, How do you feel about that you're going to be on TV?
I love it. I like the praise, and no matter what age, I love the praise. I always did, always enjoyed doing the shows when I was in the service or wherever I did shows. I loved it. I like being before an audience, knowing that I can do feats of strength that others can't do. And on top of it all, who can do what I do at 93?
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Another 5 months, I'll be 94.
Well, and what about in terms of facing the judges? What do you think of the judges that are on there?
Well, I like the judges. I mean, they enjoyed it. They thought it was great. Howard Mandel, Heidi Klum, and Melby, all three of them gave me a quick yes immediately. Howard Stern loved it, thought it was great, but he felt my type of act didn't fit into this type of category for America Got Talent, but he thought it was great what I did do.
Okay, that's it. That figures that he would, yeah. By the way, do you find things like that your neighbors constantly ask you to do things like, oh, I can't lift this, can you do this for me or something?
No, they respect my privacy and they. They enjoy hearing about me, and they enjoy my stories that I tell, and so on, about my life in show business and all that with my dad. I have enough photographs around, and then I keep myself busy doing a little artwork on the side. I made a nice couple of pieces that's hanging at the Veterans Hospital in Fort Hamilton. My side hobby is mirrors. I have glass cutters that I cut out in the shape of landscapes, buildings, and so on. And then I do painting of backgrounds and so on. And I cement the mirrors to the backgrounds. And I make scenery of different cities around the country.
Wow.
I have. So I'd love to, for someone to, from your paper or where are you from, to come over and see some of the things that I have hanging.
Oh, definitely would. I'd love to come. Yeah, because I'd like to get some photos of you, too.
You're welcome to my place at any time.
Well, we won't say it on the air. We'll afterwards. I'll get your address. I live in I live in Woodhaven, so I'm not terribly far.
You're close to me. I go through Woodhaven all the time.
Yeah. So that's not so bad.
No, just take Woodhaven Boulevard. In 10 minutes, you're at my house.
Yeah, because it goes right into Cross
Bay, right
to the ocean. Right into the Rockaways.
Yes. I look out of my window. I got the ocean right there.
Oh, that's...
I'm at 105th Street and Shorefront Parkway.
Okay. Wow.
I'm right at the ocean where there's no more boardwalk.
I was gonna say, but what shape is it in at this point?
Well, they're trying to fill in everything, but when they'll put a boardwalk back, who knows?
Yeah.
The only reason I didn't lose anything, because I live in a high rise, and my brother called me. He lives in Long Island. He called me. He said, you won't be hurt in the building, but you'll lose your car. And sure enough, I drove that night to Long Island. I stayed that night at his house in Plainview. And I came back the next day. The boardwalk was three blocks in. Part of the boardwalk was past the train station.
Wow.
It was washed right up. Over 5,000 cars were washed away in Rockaway alone.
Oh, yeah. And one of these days they'll, you know, fix up everything here in New York before we worry about what needs to get fixed in the other countries, huh?
Right.
Yeah,
you're
but anyway,
welcome.
But that's another story altogether.
If you want my address, I'll give you the address.
No, not on the phone.
Call me at any time.
Not on the radio, you're not.
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'll call.
You
I'll,
have my
I'll,
phone
okay.
number. You can call me
that's
anytime.
Right. I have the phone number you called in on, right? Not that I'm going to tell anybody, but I got that. Okay.
That's my home phone.
Yeah, that would be fabulous. Have you told, like, do all your, like, neighbors know that you're going to be on the show?
Oh, yes, of course.
And they're all ready to tune in.
Told my neighbors. In fact, the Wave newspaper said they'll put a few words in on the Friday's issue to watch it. That I'll be on. And also, I had an appointment yesterday at the Veterans Hospital, so I told them, and they said they'll make the announcement for people to watch it. I enjoy knowing that people are interested in what I do, age or no age, whatever it is.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'll get this in. I never worked for The Wave. The Wave had a second newspaper called The Forum years ago.
Right, right.
And that's the paper I had worked for. So
I knew
all the people at The Wave.
Yes. Yeah, I knew Leon Locke before he passed away.
Oh, yeah. Leon and
Susan.
What's the guy's name?
In fact, I saw Susan this morning.
Yeah. But the one I worked closely with, now I'm trying to remember.
Howie Swabash or something like that.
I know the guy and his son, I think, is working there. And I can't think of the guy's name.
But his name was Howard. Howard Swabash or something like that.
Yeah.
But he's not there anymore.
But, well, that's great that you're getting, you know, the publicity. Of course, we're not going to talk about how long you'll be on and stuff like that.
Time will tell.
Time will tell.
Right.
Yeah. But it would be interesting, actually, to see any follow-ups of what happens because people see you doing this on TV.
Right. Well, keep in touch with me. And
oh, yeah, certainly
anytime
will.
Anytime you decide to come down and do a little photography of whatever, it would be my pleasure.
Okay, I'll certainly get that done. Is there, oh, yes, I know what I have to ask you. So what is it you do to keep healthy?
What do I do to keep healthy?
Yeah.
Well, it has a lot to do with, like I said, mind control. I did follow one of my dad's things that he used to brush his teeth with kosher salt, but that was strictly to cleanse the gums and kill bacteria in the mouth around the gums. And with all the biting of chains that he did all his life, I just followed, although I only do it once a week with the kosher salt, but I still have the habit of doing it, knowing that my dad did it. But other than that, I just try to watch my sodium as much as I can as far as food, and I try to keep my mind as mentally good as I can.
Okay, great. Well, we'll pass that on as something to do to keep your teeth healthy anyway.
Right. I try.
So we'll be tuning
going.
In. I think it's is it the 27th, I believe?
The 27th, which is a Tuesday, I'm supposed to be on.
Okay.
And we'll see what happens from that point on.
And it'll be interesting to see if you continue on as to all the challenges, I guess, all the things that you know.
Well, I'm keeping my mind clear and my hopes high and see what happens from this point on.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that.
Now, this story that I'm giving you today, where will that appear?
Oh, that's going to be in the Times Ledger.
Okay. When does that come out?
They print every Thursday or Friday, but it's too late for this edition, so probably we'll get into the next one, I guess.
Okay.
But that I don't have control over.
I know.
I do the
that's
writing.
I don't know who carries the Time Ledger.
I don't know, like, where it goes into the Rockaways. It might be.
Well, I'm into
the one
Howard.
That goes like that's.
I'm in Howard Beach quite often.
Yeah, I think it's the one that's designed for Howard Beach.
Because I go to Howard Beach quite often. I go into a little restaurant there, a breakfast restaurant, the Sugar Bun.
Oh, the Sugar Bun.
Yeah. I go in there.
I also write for the Queen's Times, too.
The where?
I also write for the Queen's Times as well.
Uh-huh.
And that, okay. That I know goes to, can't think of the place. Is that place that it's like a big deli kind of thing? Italian? They got a grocery store. Like a small Italian grocery store.
Brothers. And then there's Ragtime.
Ragtime, that's it.
Uh-huh.
They
okay.
always have
that's,
the Queen's Times.
Okay, that's on Rockaway Beach Boulevard. Rockaway Boulevard, I mean. No, it's on Woodhaven Boulevard.
Yeah.
Right. Okay,
so,
I'll check with them.
But, you know, I'll let you know, you know, like when it when the article comes out. And
mail me a copy.
Oh, I'm not even at the. Wait a minute. I can't even tell you how many articles I've done for the Times Ledger, and I don't even have a tear sheet from any of them.
I know what you mean.
I have to go online.
I know what you mean. I'll find
it. I go
online
to the Times Ledger. I put in my name, and I can see all the articles I've been writing.
Okay, I'll find it somewhere along the line.
We'll get it to you. Don't worry. But first, I'll get back with you, and we'll set up a time and day that I can come in and take photos. Okay?
And what did you say your name was?
It's Merle, M-E-R-L-E, and the last name is Exit, E-X-I-T.
Okay. That's where I get up.
No, I changed it. I changed mine to Exit so I could see my name up in lights.
No, let me see. Okay. Very good.
Okay. All right. I'll be in touch. And
very good.
It was a pleasure having you. And we'll all be rooting for you.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yep, we'll be rooting for Mike, or better known as Mighty Adam Jr. And as I'm waiting for Curly Hall to call in, which I could call him. I could call him, too. But let's take a break. Oh, I didn't have. Well, yeah, let's have some. Yeah, got it. Okay. That was Esther and Eunice talking. Okay. My lovely rubber chickens can't manage without coming into the room here and chatting with us. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let's, instead of doing a commercial, I'm going to throw in, because I like Josh Groban, so let's do a little Josh Groban over here in the meantime, and then I'm going to call early.
Who can say for certain? Maybe you're still here. I feel you all around me, your memory so clear. Deep in the stillness, I can hear you speak. You're still an inspiration. Can it be that you are and you are watching over me from up above? Fly me up to where you are beyond the distant stars. I wish upon tonight to see you smile. If only for And isn't faith believing all power can be seen as my heart holds you just one beat away? I cherish all you gave me every day, 'cause you are mine forever, love, watching me from up above. And I believe that angels breathe, and that love will live on and never
Howdy, everybody. Good afternoon.
Hey, Curly.
Yes, it is. Curly here, partner. Howdy.
It's Merle Exit calling.
Oh, howdy. Howdy, Miss Exit. Good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
Okay.
Okay. Glad to speak with you.
Okay, so...
You're breaking up. Let me move around here. My phone, I don't know how this is... Hold on.
Why, certainly.
Okay, go ahead. Talk to me, Miss Exit. Talk to me.
You can call me Merle, by the way. It's okay.
Okay, Merle.
So I got to ask you. You worked at the 1960 World's Fair in the African Pavilion, right?
Oh, yes, that's correct. That's correct. That was many years ago, many, many years ago. It's so many years ago, it feels like, did that ever happen? You know, the memory is so getting so vague now, but it was a time in my particular life that was one of the greatest ventures that I had, you know, I don't know if you're familiar, but at the World's Fair, there was the African Pavilion. Matter of fact, how old are you? Were you ever there?
Well, I was at the fair. I was about, I think, 15 years old.
Oh, okay. All right. You're retirement age. You're retirement age then.
Yeah, I even found some photos.
Oh, my gosh. That was great. Well, anyhow, you know, African Pavilion, a long time ago, I was involved for quite a few of my younger years and things in the African cultural drumming and dancing and things. And what had happened was that when the World Fair opened up, there were a number of us in the New York area who were kind of like involved in the African dance and drumming and rhythmic thing. And one particular dancer, his name was Chuck Davis. He's still world known around. And Chuck Davis, you see, was a tall man. And at the World Fair, he was one of the Watusis. You know, we had the South Africans come over, and we had the Watusis come over from Africa. And we were... New Yorkers. And however, because of our involvement, we were accepted quite a bit. You know, as the knowledge that we had as far as the drumming rhythms and Chuck Davis being so well-versed in the many different movements of Africa. You know, if him and I, we always enjoyed working together, you know.
Uh-huh.
So one of the things is that at the beginning of the fair, right on the outside of the African Pavilion, they had something called the Barkers. And the Barkers would say, come around, you know, like many of the carnivals many years ago. Yeah, the Barkers used to come around and call you in and make you interested in paying your money to get to see the sights and the visions and the lions, because they had lions there. They had, a number of birds, like, you know, plus they had a beautiful restaurant in that same motique style of Africa. And you would be able to eat and dine and see the show right from the balconies of the show. We would really, really enjoy ourselves. The drumming rhythms that used to be played. What had happened was when I was 6 years old, I was taught to play the drums. Let's say not the snare drums or anything, but the drums an African conga, Cuban conga, djembes, and many different kinds of things. I grew up playing in the dance studios and being a part of the dance life. You know, I knew all of young ladies. Excuse me.
If you can from there.
I'm sorry. I just pulled in with my horses and everything, and we have some kids coming up from school.
And
asking if they could see the horses and see this. That's another part of my life now. I've been through maybe about 5 stages of life, you know, and have 5 different names. All of them. Sometimes I don't know which name I should be called when somebody calls me something, because each name. When I was at the World Fair, my name was Saumba, Raleigh Saumba, and
how do you spell it?
S-A-H-U-M-B-A.
Oh, okay.
S-A-H-U-M, Saumba. And that's the stage name I carried for many years, you know, doing my tenure into the drumming. I had stayed into music for some time as well, doing that as well as creating my new life with my construction business. You know, I happened to... wait a minute. Can I speak to you? I mean, like, can I talk to you like I'm talking now or something?
Yeah, sure.
I'm trying. What it is that I had such a full life, you know, with various things, such as when I was, I started off in the computer business, key punching, tab operator. I lost my job. I never knew what destiny had set out for me. So life is a tricky, interesting thing, and it's been good to me. But good to me doesn't mean that I've been cream puffed all the way through. I've had hard times, big decisions to make, problems and everything. But if you stick with them, if you continuously stay on course of something, they work themselves out as well as you work them out, and you never know what path it's going to lead you to. You know, so... retrospect to that, I was in construction for 41 years. I owned my own business, and I enjoyed that life as well. That's right during the time I was in the post office, during the time I was playing music. At one time, I never slept. I said, oh, boy, I never need to sleep. I don't need sleep. It's okay. Holy mackerel, it crashed down on me one night because I was up day and night doing things. But, you know, that was a very, not challenging, because when you're in something, when you have things to do, you're constantly doing them, not recognizing what the consequences are on your body, or not realizing that you're performing unbelievable tasks. you know, for yourself. And that's where I was. I was into a place that I just kept trying to put food on the table for my little kids. And I had gotten married, of course. I was young and, you know, young and spry. But saying all of that, you know, life just moved on. And back to the World's Fair, it was a beautiful time in my life. I was there for about a year when it first opened, you know. And
did they call you, or was there like a newspaper at part time? We will train, kind of thing. Was it how did you get to be in it? Is it, you know, did you notice that they put out a call for people?
Yes. Well, yes. What had happened was that if you were a part of that particular cultural setting during that time in the 60s, all of the different musicians, drumming musicians, I don't know if you remember, Olive Tunji, and then it was Taiwo Duval, and it was, his son just died, Gus Dinizulu, you know, because Gus was at the vet fair, and, you know, a number of the people, the in-crowd, when I say in-crowd, if you were a drummer, you would go to the different dance studios and you would play for the dancers at the studios. You would not necessarily be there for the reason of trying to find work. You were there trying to enjoy life and to enjoy your drumming, your rhythmic settings that you were part of, you know.
Right.
So once the World's Fair started to open, these different groups from New York who were culturally already established had gotten phone calls and say, hey, listen, the fair is going to open. Would you be interested? Of course, they would have had business meetings and things of that kind. And because also, you know, back in that era, they brought over from Africa, from South Africa, from Guinea, the different dance troupes as well. But they couldn't, as you say, bring all of the troops over. It might have been costly to prohibit it or something, you know. When I say that, there might have been three great dance groups who contributed to the World's Fair, who was into the cultural settings and things of Africa from this country. And
right.
Then there might have been four or five other groups that they brought over and shipped in from Africa, you know, which was really, you know, it was exciting. It was exciting for all of us to get together and, you know, play our rhythmic drums. And it was really a great part of my life, you know, during that time.
So in other words, and I guess maybe I just for clarity. So in other words, you were already there playing your drums, and then they hired you, or?
No.
No.
I wasn't there playing drums. We just heard that they're looking for, drummers. And Gus and Dennis Uwe got called, and, Alatunji. Alatunji's from Africa. Gus is a minister in Ghana, but there's several of them have passed now. I mean, time has gone on. So many people have left this particular went over to the other side. And however, saying that, you know, the call went out, and people who were interested,
okay,
you know, just went there, and you found out, okay, are you interested in playing? You know, your group, and you'll be on Tuesdays and Wednesdays when the other group is not performing, you know, because they had to have days off and had to have fill-ins. They worked their schedule as they had to as far as the actual management of the African Pavilion, you know.
Right.
So
their
thing.
Did they have authentic food? I'm just curious.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Very much so.
I'm lucky.
I think
there's a South African restaurant in Brooklyn that I want to get to. Other than that, I don't know. You know, I mean, there's African food.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But there's...
Well, Go ahead. Food is food.
No, I was just saying, but South African food is...
A little different seasoning.
You know, it's not like, you know, at least I don't know any place, let's say, in Queens.
Okay. Not at this time. Can I say that as well? My mind is slipping me. Let's see. I have friends of mine who are still, let me think, who are still around and eating and having different cultural events. You know, generally the African foods are at the events, the cultural events. They're not really, you don't have too many restaurants that are opened up saying that this is South African food, or like you have Chinese foods, you know,
right.
Chinese restaurants are all over. No, we haven't been able to establish that kind of an idea as yet, you know, and
well,
I don't know if it would ever happen.
The one I had found online was a place called Mandebo. I guess that was the nickname for, Mandela.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar. I'm sorry.
Oh,
right.
That's so far the only one that I found that I'm at some point going to get to, because I did go to South Africa on a trip.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
You know,
but anyway, let me cut to this thing as to what started your being a cowboy?
Oh, my gosh. Well, now you're talking another historical moment in my life. Well, I'll sum it up. I'll try to say it within 2 minutes, 1 minute maybe. Let's see. My mother and father took me horseback riding right here in Queens one particular year when I was 9 years old, and I enjoyed it so much that I said, I'm going to come back. And then, of course, I used to go shoe shining to make $1.50 to go riding on the horse for an hour and a half or 1 hour. A couple of friends of mine, two other friends, we used to go every Saturday to Lynn's Riding Academy many, many years ago, and we just enjoyed riding. So as years passed, and that was when 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, up till I was 13 years old, we used to ride quite a bit. And so as time passed, though, you know, you start to get married, you move into other kinds of things. You don't have time, like a child, to spend on what you love to do. You have to do what you have to do. So periodically I'd go riding and horseback riding periodically. I send my kids to riding school, camp, and they enjoyed all of that. So time went on, and one day after maybe 45, 50 years, I said, I still love riding, of course. And they say, hey, why don't you come down to my place? They got a place over here where the Federation of Black Cowboys has some stalls and horses. I said, what? Where at? And so a friend of mine took me over to a location, and ever since then, that was about 18 years ago, 17 years ago, I've never left. Once I started, I leased a horse, and then I bought a horse, and right from there on, it kept happening. Then I started entertaining, started getting understanding with horses, and we at the Federation of Black Cowboys, we are a diverse group of men who have different common things about us. One, the love for horses, and we have kids come in and learn how to ride. Over in Howard Beach area, we have our big stables. At one time, we had 55 horses, and now we were closed for renovation. We're just opening up this month again, but since then, I've built my own barn now, my own stables. So with my livelihood, construction. So it was fairly easy for me to create and build a stable. And so with that in mind, I'm now, of course, stuck in it more than ever, you know. So I'm enjoying. I give lessons and I go out. Hey, matter of fact, you know what you can do, Meryl?
Yes.
Google Cowboy Curly Hall. Google. Somebody told me. Yeah, somebody told me to do that one day, and because they have a performance, maybe six little videos of me doing a show, you know, doing a show in a park for some kids, and I never knew it was there, and I said that that was to my, what do you say, to my joy when I saw it. I, look at this. However, yeah, if you get a chance, just do that, you know. And that'll give you some more insight on what I'm all about with horses. And as a matter of fact, you might be able to come and ride with me one day, Meryl.
I
you know?
No.
Yeah?
I can walk.
You know, what you
me,
said you
me
can
Me and
walk.
Getting on a horse doesn't work.
Oh, my God. No, no, no. It would work. It would work. I am a trainer who loves to bring people in on their own level. I can talk them into anything.
And the reason, by the way, the reason that I have a problem about it, I know this is probably the most ridiculous part, is about being afraid of heights.
Oh, my God.
That's well, not even
that's
the damn horse.
Yeah. But I can understand that, indeed. You know, one of the things is that, you know, when you get up on the horse, it does feel as if you are very, very high up, even though it might only be 5 foot, 6 foot. It feels like you're very high up. Yeah.
Yes.
But I'll lock you into the saddle with
and
encouragement.
I'm short.
Oh, you're short? How tall are you?
Like 5'2".
Oh, well, that's good. I got a saddle just for you. I've got one that would reach your legs. Your legs would. Oh, I've got a saddle just for you to be comfortable on with. That'll work out. That'll work. Maybe I'll talk you into it next week or something. I'll try to call your girlfriend or something and mention it to her, and have her talk you into it or something of that kind.
There's nobody. but in the meantime, now you said that the stable. When will the stables open? By the way, reopen.
Okay. Well, the Cedar Lane Stable, the Federation of Black Cowboys, they're open at this time, and they are accepting applications for.
No. What I'm asking is the place in Howard Beach.
That's right. The one in Howard Beach.
Yeah. So if I come to take photos, because you said there'll be.
No, you couldn't. You can come to take photos if you met me there. Right now, we don't have all the horses or animals. We've got some geese there, and we have some. Other types of animals running around.
I could ride a goose. They're low to the ground.
We've got plenty of fish. We have a pond, a lake there that's really beautiful. You know, a stream lake that runs on the side of the Vaughan. It's really nice. It's a little oasis in the middle of the city. No,
right.
Not like Central Park.
But I'm asking,
but
I guess
it's between Howard Beach.
Right.
You know,
when will the whole thing be restored?
Oh, alive and kicking with lots of people coming and everything, maybe by the end of the summer, believe it or not.
I'm not going to wait till then to get photos. Okay.
No. You could come, but we can talk at another date. Because I don't want to spend all your time now speaking about something of that kind.
Okay.
Hey, by the way, okay, all right, anyhow, all of the above, everything.
Okay, well, we'll get to do that. So, now, when was this Federation of Black Cowboys, when did that, was that been around for a long time?
Oh, yes, no, I would say it was a short time, 1990.
Oh, okay.
1990. Something like that, 1990, the fellas got together and established that particular setting, you know, and the group was formed. It was 43 members when it really was moving on and kicking hard and everything. We did a lot of trail rides. We go down south. Hey, do you know every weekend there in a different state there are groups of black cowboys. Now, I say black cowboys. I don't mean it in a derogatory way because of the fact that, or a racial setting. I just make mention of the group, this diverse group of people get together, and it's like over 400 cowboys that get together on weekend, what do you say, they're not called shindigs, they're called trail rides. You know, they cook out, they camp out, bring all the campers and everything, and we really, beautiful time when that happens, when I'm able to travel. I don't like driving too much, but periodically I'll go North Carolina or something of that, or Maryland for sure, and, you know, have a great venture. It's usually on a weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and, you know, it is not, all of these particular groups, they are not under the banner of the Federation of Black Cowboys, because there are a number of different groups who have their own signatures and their own names and things, different clubs, organizations, nonprofit organizations and things in different states. But it's a way that the cowboys keep hope alive and keep the black history moving forward, you know. And that's all I can say about that, you know. I mean, there's much to talk about, but right now that's about the end of the issue.
Okay.
You still there, Meryl?
I'm still here. I'm still here and listening
okay.
to you. But we got to
okay.
now go to the end of the show.
I'm on a show?
Huh? You're on the radio.
I'm on the radio? I thought we were going to just speak on, okay,
remember
you were a reporter.
You remember you were
supposed
to call me?
Ah, yes, yes. Oh, that's what that was for. Huh? Oh,
yes.
Okay. I didn't. Okay,
and I went,
very good.
Maybe I'll call him. So that's what I did.
Yeah, I was tending to the horses, Merrill. You know, they come first. Yeah, they come first. Duty calls. We just come back in.
Okay.
All right. But please have a lovely day still and end your time.
Yes.
All right?
Yes,
and
I'll be in touch with you soon.
Okay. Thank you for calling me, and thank me for calling and speaking with you. Ciao.
Okay.
Adios.
Okay.
Right.
Bye. Okay, well, I don't know if this was recorded, but I guess I'm now going to end the episode, so ta-ta.